for my poor job of Zooming. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
There we go. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any public comment? Hearing none, how about a motion to approve the agenda, or the minutes rather?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Okay, CEO report.
Nothing to report.
Geez, you sound like me. Chief Administrative Officer report information. Anybody have questions about the Las Palmas Medical Partnership leasing update? Okay, I'm going to, as I've done in the past with the financial reports, I'm going to go 1 through 10. You stop me if you have questions. The District Las Palmas Medical Plaza financial statements, any questions? The accounts receivable summary on page 21, any questions? Deposit detail on page 22. The district property tax receipts on 23. The Las Palmas Medical Plaza deposits on 24 and 25. The district check register 26, 27.
Well, I have something. I have a question on page 26.
Go ahead.
Okay, page 26. Hold on. Let me get there. I have my little notes here. Page 26. This is a really quick question.
No, take your time. This is this is why we're here.
Remember, it was the check to EPA. What is that? The $35,099.
There was a claim, a lawsuit situation from years and years ago prior. This had to, with regard to Desert Regional regarding an EPA issue with some disposal of some waste materials. And it was, I believe it was prior to the actual lease in 97. So it kind of comes back to the district's responsibility, and Jeff Scott was involved with this process. So it was a settlement that was, this was actually brought to the board. So the board was aware of it at a prior meeting a few months ago. So the settlement was finally brought forward and payment made.
It's a settlement from back to the 1980s.
Any further questions on that? Then I'll go on to the credit card detail. Oh.
No, check register.
Check register.
I have a question.
No, please, go ahead.
There's a check to $28,800 to Cohen Mush Thomas Medical Group. Chris? Yeah,
so new tenants or renewed tenants, they are offered a tenant improvement allowance. And so that is
this is a credit. Oh, this is a credit improvement allowance.
No, tenant improvement allowance.
This is something we paid for on their behalf.
Yeah. So what we do is agree to reimburse the tenant for tenant improvement costs up to X amount.
Thank you.
Good. Any other check register questions? Those are two great catches. Credit card detail. The Las Palmas Medical Plaza register, which I think we did, but the retirement protection plan.
Question, I see it now. Chris, you actually did give us the trend line month to month. We lost one additional person retired, and apparently
we have two that left employment, so you'll see that reduced from 98 to 96, and then a net of one increase on the vested, so two that left employment, and then one additional that actually was dispersed. So two moved to the vested And then we had a net of one that was paid out. So
let me ask you this question. It's a strange question. Theoretically speaking, and it's a very theoretical question, every person employed today could ultimately become vested?
No.
Well, once they leave employment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'm saying someone, so people,
I mean,
could.
They're essentially vested. It's just that we move them from the active list to the termed vested list.
Okay. Do we know who's coming down the pike? And if are the people coming down the pike financially covered, so to speak?
Well, we have resources to cover every participant that's in the plan. If the world stopped today, if all employees left employment and we had to pay them all out today, we'd be able to pay them out 100%. Now, in answer to your question, do we know who's coming down the pipe? I mean, we have, you know, a list of participants and when they started employment at the hospital. And quite frankly, I would be expecting to see several, you know, start leaving employment. I've anticipated that over the last year or so, but there's several that have been employed, you know, 40 years or so. And so it's,
I wasn't sure if I heard you correctly. You say you do or do not have a list. I didn't hear what you said.
Oh, yes. We have a list, a complete list of participants and the dates that they started employment. And so there's several that, you know, that have been employed there 30, 40 years. So I would expect to see more leaving employment, but I guess it's a credit to those that continue working there for as long as they have, and the environment that they're working in, and they're appreciative of being there. So
you got a guy named Seymour?
I'm sorry?
You have a guy named Seymour? No, I just... Yeah. No, I understand that. You know, from my experience, there's only two types of employees in hospitals, and we are a perfect example of it. People who stay 1 to 5 years and lifers. And we are enjoying the benefit of individuals who affiliate with us, commit to the program, and commit their working lives to us. It's really a credit to our people.
Right.
And just, I think everybody knows this, but I want to clarify. These are the people that were working and participating in the hospital's retirement plan at the time of the lease. And that number froze somewhere around 500-600 or whatever it was. And right. These are the remainders of the people that have been there since, what is that, 1987 or something like that? 1997, yeah. So... not only have they been there a long time, this plan goes back to 1997 when it was terminated. Well, and so these people start.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Arthur.
I was just going to say, so that raises another question then as a reconciling item. People who are currently in the existing pension plan might very well end up as a reconciling item in the tenant negotiations.
No, this is separate because when they converted to tenants employees in 97, this plan here was with the Desert Healthcare District and became a frozen plan. And the terms were that the funds would be maintained by the district until they left employment at the hospital. Now, they then fell under whatever tenant has for their retirement plan. So they have whatever 401k plan, if that's what they have there, under a separate.
It's a tenant liability after the transition.
Correct. So this stays with us no matter what.
Nobody knew after that cutoff date stays with us. That's what my original question was.
Yeah, so there's nothing new after the 97 date.
Just, yeah, thank you. That was what I was, we got to it backwards, but that's what I was trying to understand. Thank you.
Right.
Great. All right. As this is kind of my parting meeting, I want you all to understand that program. That's
you're still around here in November.
All right. There's we're getting there.
And we might keep you till December since it's not really official till December.
December 5th, it's over. Grant payment schedule. Any questions on that? Okay, hearing none. So why don't I just entertain a motion to approve all of the financial reports?
So moved.
Second. Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. And Arthur, I think you're an aye.
Aye.
Okay, Mr. Dak. Sorry we took so long.
Yes, thank you. So again, my name is Gary Dak. I recognize many of you from last time we did the audit. I'm the audit partner with Lund & Guthrie here in Palm Desert. And as you know, we did the audit back in the late 2000s, and I think we last did it in 2003. So we're very happy to be back again. I'm going to give you a brief overview of everything you're looking at in the audit reports that I submitted to Chris. And just if I pass over something that you have a question on, just stop me. So I'm just going to give you what I think is a brief overview, keying in on the key points. So overall, the audit went very well. Chris and finance staff are very accurate in everything they do. We did not have any audit adjustments. Chris had a few closing adjustments just based on timing of getting his information to close the books. And so overall, when an auditor says there's no audit adjustments, that's really the best indicator to you as finance committee members and board members and management that that's very accurate accounting. Because again, last thing you want to hear is an auditor coming in and making a bunch of changes to your controller and finance director's numbers. Great job by Chris. In the handouts, I'm going to go over that communication with those charged with governance letter. There's a couple brief letters. The first one is the communication letter. And these are required bullet points that we as auditors must cover with you. And it's like a 3-page letter. What's important there? Are you doing the scrolling, Chris?
Andre.
Okay, Andre, just go one more page, Andre. I just want to focus in on the only one thing on that page, on that report. Whoops. I'll talk while you're trying to find it. But either way, the communication letter just tells you that we didn't have any difficulties performing the audit. Right there, just at the bottom, corrected and uncorrected misstatements would be the place where we would indicate whether there's any significant or audit adjustments. So that's what I wanted to focus in on. No misstatements, as I said. But when you read through here, it's all positive assurance. You know, we didn't have any disagreements with management. We agreed with your accounting. We agreed with your estimates and so forth. But the key thing there, when you're looking at this, is the listing of any corrected or uncorrected adjustments there. So that's it for that letter. Again, it's very vanilla. It's all positive. No problems to discuss. On the next letter, I think is another 2-page letter. It's the report on internal controls. There you go. Internal controls and compliance. And so basically what this is telling you is there was no findings and material significant deficiencies. And again, that's a positive letter once again. So again, pretty standard for the operations for the district, from my understanding. It's a very clean operation, has been a clean operation, and once again, is a clean operation accounting-wise. So now let's talk about the numbers. The numbers, I'm going to go through the district first, and this is a very lengthy report, so I'm just going to kind of focus in on a couple of the key things that I want to discuss. Basically, and again, I don't know if you're going to be able to keep up on the scrolling, but on page 1 and 2 is our audit report, and this will be on our letterhead once it's been approved, basically. And what's important there is at the top of the next page that indicates in the opinion paragraph right there at the top that these financial statements present fairly. So that's what you want. It's the highest level of assurance when you have an audit from a CPA. So again, clean opinion, that's what you always had in the past anyways. The next series of pages are the management discussion analysis. I'm not going to go through that. It just gives the high level overview of the financials. But what I will do is go to my page 8, which is the statement of net position. And this, again, as you know, it covers your assets and liabilities. And again, the the highlights for the district, if you want to just go, let's see. Total, right there. If you can scroll down just a little bit, right in the middle of the page, you can see total assets of $75 million. So you see total assets went up about $1.5 million. So again, positive sign there. And when you look at the big picture of that account for total assets, if you couple the cash and the investments on that page, you're basically sitting at about $62 million worth of cash and investments compared to $60 million and some change last year. So overall, your cash and investments went up close to $2 million. So obviously a good sign of that. And really what attributed that $2 million increase in cash and investments was, we're going to see when we flip the page next, you had about a $4.7 million profit, and that was reduced by grant payments during the year of about $3.2 million. So those are the main highlights in your assets. Down in the liabilities, go back to the prior page, Andrea, if you don't mind. The prior page is the liabilities, the bottom half there. Your major liability there, obviously, is your grants payable. I mean, that's what you're in there doing, providing grants to the community. And so grants payable, as you can see, are shown in two different locations there, under current and non-current. So when you look at your grants in total, you're about 9.7 million grants this year. Last year, about 12.9. So again, you had new grants have coming in about 3 million that were awarded, and then you paid out about 6 million. So again, a significant liability obligation, but that's what you're there for, is to provide grants to the community. And again, it had a net reduction because of pay downs. And then the last item to talk about is two lines below that, net pension liability. As you all know about that account, we just kind of talked about it earlier. That's the unfunded liability on your pension plan, the frozen plan that Chris alluded to. So again, that number is strictly right off an actuarial valuation that you get each year. And again, that number could swing based on discount rates and actuarial calculations. And so there's a whole series of methods of calculating that. But Chris and I just basically get that report from the actuary, and that's the number you put on your financial. So now if we can turn the next page, revenues and expenses.
Let me interject there just momentarily. For Arthur's purposes to the discussion earlier, the net pension liability, that is, so when the employee leaves the employment of the hospital, they get paid out right now. So, but the net pension liability currently has to be calculated based on if the employee was getting paid out on an annuity for the remainder of their life. So it has to take into account, you know, net present values, discount rates, all that kind of stuff. So it creates a larger dollar amount, assuming that these folks are going to be paid out for the rest of their life. So that's what we have to record on our balance sheet. So it shows that we're unfunded by $4.6 million based on that actuarial valuation. Now, in reality, if the employees leave today, we have resources in the bank to cover paying those folks. So just for clarification purposes.
Okay. All right. If we could flip the page to the next one showing your revenues and expenses. I mean, this is basically what generates your monies. And you can see the operating revenues at the top subtotal went up about $300,000. And it's primarily the property tax, just the increase in real estate taxes, just a function of the assessed valuation. That was close to 200 grand. And then the third line down is the contributions. You can see we received some contributions during the year from various parties for the community needs assessment. And so those monies came in, which obviously weren't there last year. Down in the operating expenses, I'm looking at that 6,067 number. You can see total expenses, you know, pretty consistent with last year. You went up, you went down about 100 grand, 110 grand. And you can see kind of eyeballing that list from the top down, grant allocations. That's just a function of your timing of when you grant the new grants. So it's a little drop there, about 450 grand. Go ahead.
Okay, Chris, on the election fees, the amount that we have in there is zero, but we had anticipated that because we didn't have an election for three of the zones, that we thought we were going to have a savings. Is that going to be reflected in next year's audit?
Yes, it's next year's, because this is through June of 2020. Okay. So the election costs then associated with the 2020 election will be in the FY 2021 year.
Okay, thank you.
Great question.
What fees do we have related to the election? What expenses do we have?
You pay the county.
Yeah, each year there's an election. We receive election fees from the registrar of voters. So each year that we have open seats on the ballot.
I see. Thank you.
Okay. The other account, you just talked about the election fees obviously going down 110 grand, but the legal fees dropped a little bit because your COVID cut back on some of the legal activity that was required in travel at the end of the year. And then the only other account that had a significant jump was the salary and benefits. Now, the 800 this year versus 300, it looks kind of odd despite your staffing levels being pretty consistent. And so when you look at what is bringing that number down in the prior year is you had a large retirement adjustment from the actuarial calculation of about, $500,000 as a reduction last year, when that similar amount this year was only about 50. So again, it kind of skews that number when you look at it, but what makes you feel more comfortable is before that retirement calculation, which again is somewhat out of your control, salary and wages and benefits went from 820 gross to about 852. So again, salary and benefits looked in line if you kind of exclude the retirement adjustment at the end of the year. So again, that number looks very odd for comparing to last year, but it is a good number. Okay. And then lastly, the investment income right near the three quarters of the way down the page. Again, it's a very strong investment income. Once again, $2.2 million. That pretty much represents half of your net income for the year. So again, the district continues to have solid investment activity and returns. So a good sign there with your increase in net position of $4.7 million. So that's the extent of what I want to talk about on the numbers. What I'd like to do on the next couple pages, I'm going to skip over the next couple pages of the foundation, and I'm going to go into a couple more after that. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, but on the salaries and benefits for the 801 looks fine to me, but the year before 2019, 304, really that low?
Oh, it's because that was netted with a $500,000 reduction in expense for the retirement. And again, last year, as I said, the actuarial valuation, Chris records the number provided from the actuary, and last year's numbers just happened to be a reduction in retirement expense of $515,000.
Okay. So it has to do with that actuarial valuation.
Let me ask a silly question. Is that the most articulate way to image it to the community? Why isn't there a separate line for that adjustment? The equivalent of a journal entry. So anybody comparing salaries and benefits doesn't get crazy looking at a 200 and something odd, what looks to them like a 200 and something odd percentage increase.
Yeah, it does require some explanation. That's going to be your call if you want to break it out into a separate line item. My guess is that you probably didn't have a significant swing on that in the past, and it didn't jump out like it did this year. But I can certainly understand that explanation of maybe wanting to do that, but that's your decision on that, because the caption is salaries and benefits. And so it does kind of go together. But to explain that question, Arthur, I can understand, you want to do that breakout. But that's your call.
I think we understand that, but I'm just concerned about the individuals in the community who monitor activities losing their water over this. Chris, so what are your thoughts, Chris?
Well, it is a line item that does stand out. And it has in prior years, too. I mean, even prior to you being, on the board and even on the finance committee. So
That's a pretty
if you're
big
not concerned. Look, the bottom line is this: if you're not concerned about it, that's fine. If you think
it does create opportunity for needing to provide explanation. If we can break it out as a separate line item, do you see any issue with that, Gary?
No, I don't. We can certainly put that right underneath that.
Because then that way, what we would see is, if we broke it out as a separate line item, we would see in the year 2019, we would see a negative number of over 500,000 for that adjustment from the actuary. This year was about 110,000 or something, if I recall.
So I guess the question is, which is easier for you to explain and which has less volatility in the press?
If it's separated, I think is going to display better. It's just, it's separating you know, the benefits component of, you know, of what we've presented previously, the salaries and benefits combined.
Well, maybe it should be appear as a footnote then, so as not to break out the category, but put it right up front, so anybody looking at it will.
Actually, I wouldn't mind seeing it as a separate line.
Yeah. Okay. Good. Well, whatever you think is right, I'm fine with.
If we can discuss that, Chris, as far as that change then.
Okay.
All right. So the next few pages, I'm not going to go through in detail because they're basically just the cash flow statements that basically talk you through or show you the things we've just been talking about, and then the foundation financials, which I'm going to cover in the next group of presentations. So in the footnotes themselves, I just wanted to bring to your attention a few footnotes. On my page 21, there's just going to be three footnotes I'm going to refer you to because it's a very lengthy footnote group. So it's my page 21. I just wanted to bring to your attention at the bottom of that page, the investments. Right. Yeah, there we go. At the bottom of the page, kind of, if you look at the left-hand column, it kind of shows you your investments, and you can see by the asterisk which ones are the foundation. So all I wanted to bring to your attention is that $59 million basically represents about $5 million of investments in the foundation and about $54 million in the district. But what I wanted to bring to your attention is that that number excludes about $4.5 million that's with your broker that's considered cash accounts because they're in money market funds right now. And because you may sit there and say, I thought we had more than that. So again, I just wanted to bring that to your attention to kind of hedge you off at the pass because that number is a higher number because this only relates to investments and it excludes cash equivalents that are considered money funds in cash components. So just for your information, if you flip now to the next page I want to bring to your attention on page 30, my 32, skip about 10, 11 pages to 32. And again, these are footnotes that you've seen in the past. Basically, there's a lengthy series of pages there on the pension obligations that we, again, keep coming back to. And again, I don't want to go through this entirely because it's about six pages, but I want to make sure that this is the disclosure information that's required from the actuarial valuation. And again, there's a lot of information in there. And again, I'm not going to go through that in detail, but I just want to bring that to your attention. And the last footnote I'm going to bring you to is the page, my page 38. At the bottom of the page, this is a footnote that we're adding to all our financial statements now with the COVID right there, uncertainties. And it's just a general description, a footnote disclosure to the reader, just talking about the COVID has an impact in the future operations that can't be determined at this time. It's kind of more of an uncertainty. And again, some companies are handling it better operationally and financially than others. But again, this footnote is more of just an information disclosure to the reader. Again, no impact on your numbers. It's just that, you know, as the title says, it's an uncertainty. So that's the not so brief overview of the district. I'm going to move on to the retirement plan now.
Can I help you up, please?
Yes, of course.
Okay. So I'm looking at my notes, the one note that I still have unanswered is on page 67, which is your page 28.
Yep.
On that page, could you explain to me why it says on here about the health insurance that the duration of the benefits is a lifetime? It's my understanding that it's only during the time that we're in service that changed.
Previous directors.
So that's previous directors that had a lifetime benefit. So the only two that are remaining on that are the supples.
So this is wrong where it says the current retiree benefit plan, right?
So the district board, let me try this. The district board was elected, had a retirement plan that followed after they had left the board. And subsequent to the hospital lease, that all changed. And I don't know the exact dates, but Chris can fill it in. And curiously, where I live, my neighbors are the Supples. They are the wealthiest people I know. And they have lifetime health and benefits. So, but I think they're, by the way, that trauma center, that the Richards Trauma Center, that they, the name's on there, they donated the, you know, the $5 million there and whatever. So they're great benefactors of the hospital. But yeah, it's kind of weird.
I know that that has been explained to me in the past. So I understand that, that part of it. But when I saw this, I thought this must be a mistake, because my understanding is that the only ones that are receiving lifetime are the supples. So why?
That's it. And they're both still alive. And so, one's 95 and the other's 98.
Right. But you don't, this is kind
so
of.
So the word that's the problem is current?
Yeah.
I don't see why we can't remove current, but because it's the, I mean, it's really the current retiree benefit plan. I mean, there's no.
I got you.
There's no other benefit plan available to any other directors at this
point. This only applies to one person. I thought so. It's kind of.
It's two, but could current be changed to former?
Well, we could just probably drop the word current description of the retiree benefit plan.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Because we don't get that.
Right, I understand that.
Yeah. No, I got you. I could,
that, but I just thought that was kind of not correct.
Great.
Because it does say at the bottom only two people are covered.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, I missed that part, okay.
Yeah, it's just Mr. Supple and his wife.
But that's what it doesn't. I guess taking off the current will make a big difference to show that it is not current and it applies to these two people.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I can do that.
Before we go, any other questions on the district here? No, Gary. Before we go to the next one.
Yeah.
Would you give the directors your phone number?
Yes, it's 760-568-2242. And my email was on the Zoom invitation.
Great. The only reason I say that is there's a point where we previously have, you know, excluded the staff and went private and said, hey, Gary, is there something we don't know or that you're worried about or whatever? Well, Zoom meetings don't really allow for that. And by the way, the staff's great, the audit's great. Gary's been around a long time previously and now currently again. And so if directors have independent questions that they want to ask, they could do that. Otherwise, I was thinking I could ask all the employees to mute their phone and we could ask them, but that doesn't make any sense. So.
Yeah. I'm not going to have any problem discussions. So just
No. I think we're fine.
I understand.
Yeah, we're good. All right, let's go to the foundation.
Foundation, okay. We're going to do the foundation next. You got that right in front of you. Once again, accurate accounting, a clean opinion, present fairly. Page 3 on the financial statements for the assets and liabilities. One more page after that. And right should be right there. Okay, so if you can kind of center that one, highlights there, total assets went down about $1.5 million, and it's primarily the cash top line coupled with the investments near the bottom. They together total about $6.2 million. Last year was $6.8 million. So you went down cash and investments $600,000 down. And then the second line, the grants receivable, that was the homeless initiative from the Desert Healthcare District last year. So that $1 million was collected in the year. So that's why that went down to zero. So, you know, with the combination of those two, that's why total assets went down 1.6 mil. If you go down in your liabilities, the highlights there are your grants, once again, in two separate lines, current and long-term. Total grants went down about $1.3 million, and that was a net of 500,000 new grants and then pay downs on the grants payable of about $1.8 million. So you had some, you know, significant payments on your grants within the foundation for the year. And again, that comes back to what I talked about earlier, why the cash balances went down. So there's really nothing else to really talk about on that page for the assets and liabilities, unless you have any questions. But if you flip the page to page 4, it's the revenue and expenses. and the foundation's pretty consistent from year to year. You can see total revenues went from 1.8 million down to 500. So revenues went down about 1.2 million, but it's primarily that second line. The grants went down a million for, like I said before, the Desert Healthcare Initiative. So that went down a million. The other component that had some changes is the investment activity, investment gains and interest. When you couple those two together, your total investments went down about close to $300,000. And again, that's just a function of the market. So again, that basically resulted in a reduction in the investment activity. Down in the expenses, again, nothing alarming there. Expenses went from 1.7 down to 800. And again, that $900,000 drop was primarily the reduction in the grants, as I talked about. And that's a function of last year had that $1 million homeless initiative in there. So other than that, the only other footnotes I want to bring to your attention, if we flip down to my page 9, again, I'm not going to go through your footnotes, but if you go to my page 9 in the footnotes, I want to bring to an important footnote to your attention. At the bottom on page right there, $4.5 million of investment costs versus $5 million market value. So I just want to bring to your attention the paper gain at June 30 was about close to $445,000. So again, an important asset for the foundation. And the last but not least is the very last page. My page 12 talks about the uncertainty footnote on COVID once again. And again, same verbiage as the district on my page 12, uncertainty. So any questions on the foundation before we go into the final report for the retirement plan?
So, I'm sorry, so I asked a question about uncertainties, and I know that the COVID-19 impacts the whole financial statement, but I think the one where it shows the most are in the investments, right? Is that, the fluctuation, is that where it is? If somebody was looking at this, and they're looking at the first few pages and they see the differences in the investments, and then the explanation is not until the end.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Because the numbers that we just went over were the actual numbers at June 30. So what they were is what they were. This footnote pretty much talks about the future because again, the financials are as of the end of your fiscal year, June 30, 2020. And then the fact that this footnote just talks about the uncertainty for the future because the COVID could have a financial impact on those investments, on your ability for grant writing, companies asking maybe for more grants or less grants. It's just that there's so much question marks with the community and entities and organizations like you guys. And that's the purpose of that footnote. So again, it's just talking more about the unknown is that the reader of the financials looking at this and saying, okay, I see solid numbers as of June 30, but what's going on in the future? Well, what's going on in the future is everyone recovering from COVID and seeing what the impact is on operationally and financial. So that's really the purpose of that footnote. It's not to specify, well, your grants may be impacted, your investments may be impacted, staffing may be impacted. It's more of just a catch-all of everything.
And Letty, regarding the fiscal year, you have to keep in mind with regard to the investments that as of the end of 2019, 2019 was an incredibly good year with regard to return on investment. So there were obviously some down months in, the early part of the virus or the pandemic, but overall the investments for the fiscal year are in good shape. So, but like Gary was indicating, it's a little bit more of a footnote or a warning for what's unknown about the future with regard to the pandemic.
Okay, thank you, appreciate that.
Okay, all right, and we're gonna wrap it up with the retirement plan. You have that ready to load. This will be an even quicker discussion.
Maybe I missed something, Chris, with the retirement
plan? It's on page
82. Oh, 82, there we go. Thank you.
There we go. Okay, well, I'm gonna have you flip to my page 3 on that. And as Chris had alluded to earlier, this is the frozen plan. And again, the numbers are coming from your outside broker. And so really what this is showing you, again, it's you know, what's in the plan is investments. Investments is what you're investing in. And again, you can see the totals from each year went down about 130,000 in total. And again, nothing really to analyze here. These are your numbers of the breakdown of cash and investments. So again, keep in mind, it went down 130,000. So now flip the page, please, to the next one, page four. And this is the 130,000. You can see the third number from the bottom. So your basic revenues less deductions had you a loss for the year of about $130,000. So basically it was made up of the top part, your revenue from the investments. And then the middle part is the distributions, the benefits to the participants. That had a big swing, you can see. Less distribution payouts is the tongue twister. To the tune of $300,000. So again, even though the revenues went down about 160 grand from the top performance, the expenses actually went down 300,000. So again, the distributions are simply just the timing of the payouts to the members or the participants, I should say. So really nothing else to analyze there. The numbers are the numbers and it's all investment driven. And then you pay out the investments to the employees. The footnotes, I just want to bring you to one footnote, my page seven. And again, standard footnote disclosures, that's the past. And so my page seven right there at the bottom, yeah, there we go. I just want to bring to your attention once again, the investments that you're holding at the end of June 30. You can see 4.7 million is the market value and the cost of about 4.2. So you had a nice, improvement on your investments on paper. Again, this is on paper at June 30, so things can change, of about $550,000 of market value higher than cost. So again, I want to focus in on all three of these entities since your investments are such a significant part of each entity that, again, your fair market values are looking good as far as performance-wise at the end of the year with all things considered in the marketplace. And so that's about it. The rest of the footnotes in the retirement plan come back to just more disclosures of the unfunded, the pension obligations, the actuarial valuations. And again, that's a very lengthy series of pages that basically were covered in the district financials as well as the standalone protection plan. So much for my brief 5-minute overview. Sorry, Chris.
Oh, yeah, you're fine.
I went a little over. Sorry. Any questions on the audit?
I appreciated the extra time you spent. Thank you.
No, that's good. It's good. Arthur, do you have any questions?
Oh, sir, I'm good. Thank you.
So here's what I think we ought to do. I think this committee ought to recommend that the Desert Healthcare District Foundation F&A committee approve the audits as presented, and both of them, and that way Gary can get off the phone and not hang around for the next meeting. So this is an opportunity. Are there any last questions about the foundation or any of the audits?
And Mark, just to clarify, we presented all three audit reports, including the RPP, Retirement Protection Plan. And yes. In the district meeting, I believe you should approve the district and the RPP, and then the foundation would be approved in the foundation meeting. But we presented all three for ease and simplicity and for Gary's participation. So
great. Thank you for, I always forget the RPP because I'm not a participant, you know. So I think the motion, Arthur, did you hear enough there to be able to make a motion?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Gary, under really tough circumstances, that's why I asked for your phone number. If any director has any questions or wants to ask a follow-up question, that's why he's there. These are really unusual circumstances to have to approve this. Normally, we would dismiss the staff and go, hey, Gary, what are they stealing? And the answer has always been nothing.
Right.
And everything's good. And so... the reason I did that was because of that. So thank you very much, Gary. Really appreciate it.
Okay, everybody.
All right.
Thank you. Chris, I'll be in touch with you on those changes.
Point
of information, before it's distributed to the public, are you going to make that imagery change on the salary and benefits so that it comes out cleanly?
Yeah, we'll revise it for the board meeting.
Thank you.
Yes. Thank you, everybody. Bye-bye.
Great question. Gary. All right, the Las Palmas Medical Plan is a landscape.
I'm trying to log out. Hold on.
Thank you.
I'm trying to get out. Hold on.
The Las Palmas Medical Plaza landscape renovation and fire alarm electrical bid on 114 and 116. Okay. Any questions? Or go ahead. No, you go lead it. You know more about it than I do.
Okay, so I don't recall the exact month, but the committee and the board did approve. I guess it was in March, and approved the landscape design that a landscape architect had put together and had come up with an estimate of about $313,000 for labor and materials to do a complete landscape renovation there at the Las Palmas Medical Plaza. We ultimately put together then a bid package with Chris Mills, and also reviewed by Jeff Scott. Chris Mills, I think everybody knows, is a local architect and has been very, very involved with the Las Palmas Medical Plaza, so very familiar with it. So we put the project out to bid. We combined, there's some electrical connection work that needs to be done for the fire alarm system there on all six units. So it was felt that it was important to have it bid as a general contractor so that they can oversee the work that's being completed there, since it's a medical plaza. So we have a lot of vehicle traffic. We have a lot of pedestrian traffic. So we want to make sure that we have people safe and the process is being done properly with good oversight. So the bids came back in. We had a bid opening on October 6th, so just a week ago. And we figured, an estimate maybe with the, with the general contractor doing the work, maybe around $400,000. So the bid openings ranged from the very first bid that was open was $1.2 million. I about had heart failure. There were four total bids. We had two bids in the neighborhood of one was $565,000 and the other was $596,000. And then we had a low bid of $387,000. So I was feeling pretty good about that. Then we received contact from the second lowest bidder at $565,000 that wanted to see the bid documents for the lowest bidder. It was discovered that the lowest bidder does not have a Class B contractor's license, which is general contractor, which was asked for in the bid documents. This contractor is a landscape contractor license only. So we considered some options. So you'll see down there at the bottom, start with A, B, and C. So presenting three options. At this point in discussion with Jeff Scott, Chris Mills, that we do need to reject the low bid offer as non-responsive due to the contractor's license issue. So we have some options. One is we could reject the low bid and accept the second low bid at $565,000, which is still substantially higher than the estimate. I'm not so much in favor of that because I would like to try to preserve resources as much as possible in this process.
Chris, can you just explain again the defect in what was missing in the low bid contractor? I didn't catch that.
The low bid contractor only has a landscape contractor's license. They don't have a general contractor's license, a class B. They have a class C27. And so the second lowest bidder, who was a general contractor with a B license, challenged the low bid, since the bid documents do require or request a B license.
Understood.
So considered the low bid non-responsive.
How material is that? Is the general contractor's role in the project?
Well, part of why we did the general route was because we have the two components: the electrical component for the fire alarm system on the building. So we have the fire alarms connected to. So there's six buildings, three on the east, three on the west. We have fire alarm units attached to one building on either side. We now need to connect those to the other two buildings on each side. So there's some underground conduit and electrical work that needs to be done, as well as some, so there's some low voltage work as well as some high powered electrical work that needs to.
And that bidder was planning on doing it in his bid and just was doing it out of license?
He had a subcontractor, electrical subcontractor, that he had included in his bid.
I see.
But it's the license that's creating the problem. What we have is another option. The other two options would be to do a rebid. One would be to break out the components of landscape and electrical and do the two bids and allow landscapers to open up and bid the landscaping component, electrical the other. Who would oversee that? And then make sure that the coordination of all of that work took place, as well as, some oversight to ensure that there's safety, done at the Medical Plaza, and that's part of the reason that we incorporated the general contractor component. I think we lose that if we break the two pieces out and bid them separately. It may be cost savings, but I think potential liability-wise, I'm concerned about. Mm-hmm. The third option, C, would also be to rebid, but to keep the specifications the same with the Class B general contractor's license component, allowing us to complete both activities with the oversight of a general contractor.
What's your recommendation?
My recommendation, staff's recommendation, would be item C. And part of the reason I have some confidence in that, there's some things that may happen here. So, whether the next two lowest bidders, the 565 and the 595, if they would consider giving a bid, sharpening their pencils a little bit, don't know if they'll do that or not. The one positive thing, I believe, with the low bid contractor, who is a landscaper, our current contractor that does our maintenance work at the Medical Plaza is a general contractor, and he has worked with the low bid landscape contractor on other projects. It would give opportunity for them to partner up and to provide a new bid. Obviously, it's potentially a little bit higher. I don't know what that number is going to be. There's also that potential that the low bid may look at it and think that they've missed something too. I don't know. So it's a guessing game, but I think it's the right thing to do for stewards of public funds to put this back out to bid and, see where it falls. I think we're, hopefully still going to be in the, 400. It might go to 450, but I think we can get it below the 565, which is the second low bid.
If I were a betting man, I think people, the numbers two and three, will look at what the floor is that was rejected and come in right in the space you just predicted, in the low 400s, low to mid 400s would be my prediction as to what would happen. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you, that would be the way to go to rebid it.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that we move forward with staff recommendation option C for consideration of approval.
Second.
Quick question, do we have to reject this or just this motion works?
My understanding from Jeff Scott is that the motion will work because we automatically have to reject.
You can clean it up at the board if you have to.
And I'll check with Jeff, but I believe that by your consideration or direction to go with option C to rebid, I'm not sure if we need to come back to the board for approval on that, since the board had already approved a bidding process for this, but I can check with Jeff to see if we need to bring.
Yeah, whatever you two, or the staff comes up with is legal.
If we can go about it after the committee's recommendation, I would like to, get the bid process started. I think it's advantageous if we can get the work completed during the cooler winter months.
Yeah.
Because we do have plant life that we have to consider, with the heat of the
desert. But it does have to go to the board though, right?
Ultimately, yes. The acceptance of a bid will.
Well, you check with Jeff on the specific question of can three of us do that or should it go to the board?
I will confirm that.
That's the only issue I see.
Great. Yeah, because the question is whether it can. And just for a point of communication too, I did receive call today through Chris Mills, but from the second lowest bidder, who would like to talk to me about potentially seeing if they can negotiate a lower dollar amount on their bid, their first bid they gave. So I haven't had opportunity to speak with him, but my gut tells me that he's not going to come down to the numbers where we need that, and we may need to do the rebid. But
yeah. Well, whichever, and again, I would check with Jeff. You get into a little bit of soft ground when you start negotiating with the bidders.
That's the right way to do it.
Negotiate with the bidder, you're basically giving him an advantage if this is a second round. I think
right.
Be careful about that.
That's what we always did with you, Arthur. Come on. That's a joke. Okay, so the committee action then is to reject the low bid that's on the floor. Is that right?
Yes, and choose option C.
And we have a motion and a second?
We do.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye.
Aye.
Great. Excuse me, Chris, is this an action item? Are they just recommending to the board
option C? We're recommending to the board.
Thank you.
Yeah, I think you need ultimately to report it to the board and get the authority to do that, but the committee's recommending it.
Okay.
I mean, I just think, because these things tend to lead to litigation. and one little process problem is a problem. And that's all I'm trying to do is cover ourselves until I'm out of office. All right, let's call together call to order the foundation meeting. Is there a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all those in favor, aye. Aye.
Aye.
Any public comment? Hearing none. Motion to approve the minutes of September 8th.
So moved.
Second.
Second.
All those in favor, aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye. CEO? Pretty quiet.
Yes, I have a brief report.
No, I'd love to hear it. I kind of miss you.
This is ongoing and traveling very fast. This is why there is no written report, because we don't have all the specifics. But we are in conversations with the Department of Public Health to negotiating a contract for $1 million to the district to assist with outreach and coordination of activities related to COVID-19 in Eastern Coachella Valley. And I want the board members on this committee to be aware that this is happening, and very likely at the board meeting we will be presenting additional information and requesting an action.
And that's requesting any focused geography, Conrado, or are they leaving that up to us and our grantees?
No, they are requesting the areas where there is a high positivity rate and very low acceptance of the testing for COVID-19.
Is it a condition of the grant, or are they just making that as a general recommendation to us so that our grantees have some flexibility?
No, it is a condition, and they're actually identifying the organizations that will be working with us. We will serve two roles. One is as an intermediary to re-grant parts of the money, and number two, to have a coordinating role with some of the activities and connecting community members to additional resources that the county and other nonprofit organizations are making available to community members.
Thank you.
So my question, Conrado, I don't know, just as you're going into the final stages of preparing this, would be is what is the impact on the district in terms of staffing, and will that impact be covered by the county? Like, will there be sufficient funding to pay for the cost of administering the grant?
Yes, the county has offered $150,000 to the foundation to cover for those expenses, but we are doing an operational budget internally to assess what's going to be the financial impact, and if we believe that there is more money that it's needed, that we will ask that money to the county.
Okay, and the other question related to that is, The audit, is the audit that we normally do, will it be sufficient to comply with the requirements, or is there a need to do an additional audit because it is federal dollars?
I don't have an answer to that, but we have a meeting with DPH on Thursday. We're compiling questions that we will be asking, so I will add this question to them.
Thank you.
Great question, Leticia. Thank you. Okay, anything else on that? I think that's terrific. I mean, if we know anything, that COVID is striking certain communities worse than others, and anything we can do on that, it'd be helpful. So, okay, I'm gonna move on to financial statements unless there's questions. And in this format, I'm going to just walk through the way I did before. Any questions on the financial statements on page 3 to 7? The deposits on 8. The check register on 9. Where's the Brotherhood of the Elks Lodge 1905? Is that Palm Springs? Who's that?
That's the Elks Lodge there in Cathedral City, across from.
Yeah, I know it.
Peter Joe's in that. That's one of the homeless shelters or the overnight.
Yeah, no, got it.
So we're reimbursing the utilities in that.
Yeah. No, that's actually great. I was curious which one. Let's see. That was check register, then credit card expenditures. Any questions? Not much. General grant schedule. Any questions on that? Is there a motion to approve the financial reports?
So moved.
Motion to approve.
Second.
There's a second. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 And then the other matter we approved in the previous meeting, so we can just reflect that in the minutes. That unless someone feels they need to change their vote, then we've accepted the to forward to the board the foundation audit report. And with that, I believe we're adjourned unless we have something else.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, thank you.
I think we have to. reflect that Mr. Taylor has been speaking way too much. Thank you, sir.
Sorry about that. He speaks volumes in his work.
Yeah, when he speaks, you listen.
Touché. Okay, have a good day, folks.
You too. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you.